So I don't have any financial relationships to disclose relative to this presentation. And I'm going to talk a little bit about how we developed the tool for depression screening for the study and how that links back to the findings related to depression and women's disclosure in the study. And this is the logo for the study and the study funding source, NINR R01, study team, which you've already seen. These were the study aims. We had two aims in the study. The first one was to develop a health screening tool that was culturally relevant and sensitive to this population of women on welfare. And the second one, then, was to use that tool as the basis and the beginning of this case management intervention with the public health nurses who were working with the women in the study, and to screen the women in the control group as well with the tool to see what the differences were. So my objectives for today are to have you understand the importance of screening for depression and suicidal ideation for women in welfare transition programs, discuss culturally respectful methods of screening, and describe public health nursing implications for screening for depression and suicidal ideation in women in welfare transition programs. So I'm going to talk a little bit about how we got to the tool to give you a sense of the way we involved women in this process. It was a two-phase study, and in the first phase, the goal was to develop this tool. So we had 10 focus groups with 61 women. The women were able to repeat the focus group. I think we allowed them to repeat once. So we had some women that came back. They wanted to see, you know, the process where we came out with this. So we did three rounds of focus groups with three groups in each round. And at the end, we did an additional focus group with rural women. You can see that 69% of our population was African American, which is reflective of the population of women on welfare in our particular area. And the mean age was 30, and then we pilot tested the study or the tool with 100 women. I'm not going to talk about that today, but I want to tell you a little bit about the focus groups. What we did in these rounds of focus groups was the first three groups were to get a sense from the women as to what it meant to be healthy, what influenced their health, and what a healthcare provider would need to know about them to help them with health-related issues. So it was very open-ended, and we really wanted to understand their what they wanted health care providers to know about them. We used that then to begin to develop this tool. So in the second round, we began to bring things that had been developed, put in the tool and say, here are some questions we've developed, here are some screening tools that we'd like to include in the tool, what do you think of these? And we got feedback. Then in the third round, we did three focus groups, and the women actually did the tool and gave us feedback, so similar to a cognitive interviewing process where we actually had the women talk about what they were thinking as they answered the questions on the tool and things that they didn't understand or had questions about so that we could come up with the final tool to use for the study. So the things we learned from the women in this process were that they really wanted a tool that reflected their experiences. They wanted healthcare providers, and in this case the nurses in the study, to understand their experiences. They also talked about the placement and wording of questions as being really important. You don't ask stuff about sexual health in the very first question on a tool when you're working with somebody. You really need to think about how things are placed. And so if you look at the two indented paragraphs I have, with the first one wanting a tool that reflected their experiences, we wrote then this statement. And this was early on, because that indicated to the women that we were interested in what they wanted to tell us. So we have this statement that said, please take a moment to describe the things that seem stressful or overwhelming to you right now that you feel you can share with the nurse. Because that's what they said really affected their health the most, were all these they have really, really complicated and complex lives and feel very overwhelmed and stressed a lot of the time. So we wanted to get that out on the table. But then things related to more sensitive topics like depression screens were placed later in the tool. because we felt from what they told us that this was more appropriate, because as they did the tool then and were answering questions, even answering the questions on the tool helped them develop a sense of trust that whoever's asking these questions of me on this tool really care about me and what my concerns are. So we place those later in the tool, and I'll show you the paragraph in a minute that preceded that. The other things we learned in this qualitative analysis were that health screening was viewed as a process, not an event. Most of us, when we go to a new healthcare provider, they give us the form, say, go fill them out, bring them back to the office with the little glass door, right? And, you know, you can't even really speak to the person. You take the forms. They're asking you all kinds of questions about maybe, you know, your sexual health or substance use, private information kinds of questions. And I think many of us fill those out and don't think too much about it. But if you don't really trust the people in that office or don't know whether you can trust them, maybe you're not going to be as willing to disclose that information. So they really viewed this idea of health screening as a process that occurred over time. So we wanted to do things that would really facilitate their beginning to trust both the tool and what they put on the tool, but also the process of working with the nurses. And trust isn't automatic. Just because we're healthcare providers doesn't mean that somebody's automatically going to trust us. And so that means disclosure could be a real problem if we don't lay the groundwork for developing that relationship. So this is what we did based on what they told us. And the tool was broken up into two sections, and it was really quite a long tool. But the second part had the depression screen. We used the BDI-2 and the PHQ-9. So the first paragraph essentially says, we developed this tool with women who were in this program. So we set the stage to say, we asked women who were in this program like you are, you know, what would be important. And they said that they benefited from getting help with dealing with feelings or emotions and thought these questions would be important to include. The second paragraph goes on to say, to try to kind of normalize that everybody has feelings sometimes where they feel bad or feel down, and that's okay. Doesn't mean you have a mental illness or that you have depression, because as soon as people felt like they were being labeled, that might put a barrier up to disclosure. So we said everybody has these feelings sometimes as a way to sort of facilitate them feeling comfortable answering the questions. And then the third paragraph just tells them what it is we wanted them to do. And then the first screen was an anxiety screen, and the depression tools came after that. So then in the second phase of the study, we used this tool that we developed, and it had a lot of other health screening stuff in it. I'm just talking about the depression part of it. In the randomized controlled trial to test this case management intervention with the women. You've already heard about the sample, and I just mentioned that we used the BDI-2 and the PHQ-9. I'm actually using PHQ-9 data in my presentation today. And we met with the women at baseline 3, 6, and 9 months. And one of the questions we wanted to know is, would the women disclose suicidal ideation and or depression? And as you saw in the earlier presentations with the BDI-2, more than half of them did have depressive symptoms. And if they disclosed at baseline, what was disclosure at 3 months? And the reason we were interested in that was that one of our study RAs was the study RAs had been participants in the welfare program. And one of our RAs brought up the fact that if, in fact, somebody disclosed suicidal ideation at baseline, anybody who disclosed received an intervention from a nurse. And it was a fairly intensive intervention. And her concern was, if someone disclosed at baseline and got this intervention, would they feel like the nurses were in their business, and that was a term that she used, too much, and would they then not disclose at 3 months? Was it a safety issue, if you will? So we wanted to kind of look at that. So this you've seen it on the intervention group. This shows you that the control and intervention groups were very similar. The thing I wanted to point out was the number of chronic health conditions, the last two lines on this, and the generalized symptoms. These were women who had a lot of health-related issues, either conditions and or symptoms related to issues with their health. And this shows you, we ended up doing this analysis, and I'm talking about on 287 participants. We started with 432, and we ended up with 430 at baseline who had answered the suicidal ideation question. Of those, 66 had positive ideation, and on the we used the PHQ-9 for this particular one. It's a little, it asked the question a little softer. I was going to bring it, but I couldn't get online this morning to pull it up to bring the question, but it's a little more softly worded than the BDI. The people were divided into a dichotomous group, yes or no. If they said, and the PHQ-9 is a zero to three scale. So if you were zero, that was no ideation. If you answered, I think it's sometimes, almost half the time, and most of the time, I think, or something like that is the scale. Anybody who answered one, two, or three was grouped into suicidal ideation. So we had 66 women at baseline, and all those women received some kind of follow-up from a nurse. But then at the 3 months, you can see we had 109 people that were missing data. 106, we had trouble following up. Again, with this population, follow-up can be difficult. So we had 321 that answered that question at 3 months. And then because we were comparing it to the rest of the PHQ-9 depression questions or scores, they had to have completed that whole scale. So we had 34 that didn't do that. So we came up with a total sample of 287 for this analysis. So this, the next two slides show the difference from yes to no at baseline in 3 months, and then the second slide is no to yes, and I just have that second to the bottom line there just to show you to get to the 287. So we had the 244 women who said no suicidal ideation at either zero months or 3 months. And then we had 30 that said yes at baseline and zero and no at 3 months. So we looked at their corresponding depression scores. And those that went from yes at baseline to no at 3 months had almost a 10-point reduction in score on the PHQ-9. And I'm trying to remember what the total score is on that tool.
A 0 to 27.
Yeah, so that's a pretty big drop in scores. And so when you compare that to the group who didn't answer yes either time, we had a significant difference. So that was an indicator to us that the women were... That they really were less depressed and that they weren't sort of gaming the suicidal ideation question, which was what we really wanted to know. And then we had the ones that answered no at baseline and yes at 3 months. We had 13 of those folks, and you can see their depression scores got worse. The positive means their depression scores got worse. So again, that was a statistically significant difference in the means of those scores. So we felt like we were capturing those folks who were having suicidal ideation. So what does this mean? Well, I want to, you know, first I wanted to say that, you know, we did remove all the folks who had missing data, as I explained, and that the, again, reiterate that the nurses did intervene with all participants who had indicated some kind of level of suicidal ideation. And this concern that participants with suicidal ideation at baseline might not disclose again at 3 months. But as you could see from the tables, every person who had improved or who went from yes to no had improved depressive symptoms, and every person who went from no suicidal ideation to yes had worsening depressive symptoms. So what do these suggest? Well, I think they suggest that the intensive intervention with the participants who indicated suicidal ideation didn't impact disclosure of suicidal ideation at the next visit, which was our biggest concern. And that the participants were willing to disclose signs and symptoms of depression and suicidal ideation, and those that returned for follow-up were comfortable disclosing, you know, continuing to answer those questions based on how they were feeling. The tool and the relationships developed with the nurse really facilitated disclosure. We really believe that based on the feedback that we got back from folks in the study. And so what are the implications for public health nurses? Well, I think for me, and I hope for all of us, it really indicates the importance of including members of the population in all stages of an intervention design. If we just go in with our interventions and say, here's what we're going to do, if people haven't, who are of that population, haven't helped us design the intervention, it may impact these issues, particularly related to disclosure when we're working with sensitive information. And developing the tool with focus group interviews and qualitative data analysis, I think really enhanced the validity of the process because of the tool and the actual process, because we changed the process of screening based on what the women told us. We did a little things a little differently in the intervention when we met with women at baseline. And so including participants in this process may facilitate disclosure of sensitive information, which is a really important thing we want to be able to do as nurses. And that's it. That was, oh no, my limitations. I will reiterate as well, these were preliminary and exploratory, and Dr. Knipe is in the process now that all the data is collected from 9 months for both groups, that she's doing a lot more in-depth analysis with the data so we can dig down into this a little more. And we did have a small sample of folks who indicated suicidal ideation. That's a great thing. We're not unhappy about that, but it limits our statistical our ability to do a lot with the statistics on it. Thank you.